This is KMUN News. It's Thursday, March 11th. I'm Skylar Butenchin. Astoria Coast Guard crew member and rescue swimmer Tyler Jaggers died last Thursday after an accident while working to help a stroke victim on a ship off the North Washington coast. Coast Guard Rescue Helicopter Association President Rick McElrath said Jaggers fell as he was being lowered to the ship's deck from a helicopter. He was initially transported to Victoria General Hospital in Victoria, BC, and later to Joint Base Lewis McChord in Washington. Before he died, Jaggers was awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross, a top military honor. It was presented by Coast Guard Commandant Admiral Kevin Lundy in a ceremony with Jaggers' family. The Coast Guard says an investigation is pending. An investment company co-founded by a 21st century German prince, along with a network of affiliated shell companies, has been buying up timberland in Wakayakum and Pacific counties. Records show that Constantine Prince Zu Salmsalm and his companies spent more than $100 million on roughly 12,000 acres of timberland in Wakayakum County in 2024 alone. That's more than 7% of the county's total land. As Pacific Northwest timberland values are rising, the region is becoming more attractive to European investors who value cheap, privately owned land that doesn't exist in much of Europe. These new ownerships have essentially blocked off access to thousands of acres of free-to-use hunting lands owned by the state in recent years. On top of being shut out from land on which previous generations hunted, hunters in Southwest Washington are now facing possible violations for accidentally trespassing. According to the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, 10 people received elk violations related to the issue in 2025 around Wakayakum and Pacific counties. These stories come to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. Washington Health Department officials say a norovirus-like illness has been linked to shellfish sold in stores and restaurants in the Northwest. The department is recalling oysters and clams harvested in Drayton Harbor in Whatcom County near the border with British Columbia. The raw oysters and manila clams in question were harvested between February 13th and March 3rd. The state health department says they were harvested by the Lummi Indian Business Council and were distributed to restaurants and stores in Washington, Oregon, and 7 other states. Drayton Harbor is closed to harvesting until March 24th. Computer science researchers at the University of Washington are testing if a phone app can accurately monitor a fetus's heart rate during pregnancy. But pediatric cardiologists want to see more tests before this goes to market and people use it to check on their pregnancies at home. KNKX's Anna Marie Yanni has more.
Pujita Garig is a PhD student in computer science and engineering at UW, and she recently published a study testing if an iPhone's speaker and microphone can ultimately be used to estimate fetal heart rate. It's a process providers usually do in a clinic with ultrasound to check on the well-being of a fetus.
I truly believe that health belongs to everyone, so I want to use my computing expertise and create accessible health tools, especially for women's health.
Garig tested her tool in 23 pregnant patients at UW Medicine. A machine learning model then used the iPhone audio to estimate fetal heart rate. Garig says those estimates ended up being within a clinically acceptable range of error.
I hope to bring it to the market so that people can access it.
But before that, she wants to test it on thousands of people to help train more sophisticated AI, including fetuses with irregular heartbeats. Dr. Bhavna Arya agrees. She's the fetal cardiology director at Seattle Children's Hospital. She'd like to see robust clinical studies on abnormal heart rates before the tool comes to market.
When you have an irregular heart rate or a slow heart rate or skip beats or fast beats, what will AI do? What do we need to teach the machine to know not to take those pieces away, but make sure that those are an important part of the evaluation?
Arya also wants to see data on how the at-home tool might impact anxiety for pregnant people, For example, would it give them peace of mind, or would it create more worry about the health of their fetus? I'm Anna Marie Yanni reporting.
Governor Bob Ferguson has signed into law protections for vaccine access in Washington. Insurance companies will now have to cover vaccines based on state recommendations and not the federal government's. Ferguson says this legislation will preserve recommendations for vaccines against COVID, RSV, and flu, for example, which the federal government no longer endorses.
Here in Washington state, fortunately, we are not standing by and leaving ourselves at the mercy of the federal government's chaotic, politicized, and unscientific policies.
Last year, Washington formed a new alliance with Oregon and California to make vaccine recommendations in a response to federal policies under Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Hawaii has since joined the coalition. The law goes into effect immediately. The Rao River Valley is home to several rural, unincorporated communities east of Cottage Grove, Oregon. Locals say the densely forested area is especially vulnerable to wildfire and other natural disasters. 2 years ago, in an effort to bolster their chances of surviving a catastrophe, the communities banded together to create their own fire district. KLCC's Rebecca Hansen-White has more on phase two of their efforts, getting their first fire station off the ground.
Gary Mowry says when a wildfire raged through neighboring farms in 2018, he used sprinklers to save his home.
When it got to my house, I had two sections with fencing, and the fire came within 3 feet of my fence.
Mowry lives near the unincorporated community of Dorena. In an interview from his backyard, he said help used to be at least 40 minutes away if neighboring communities had engines free. Mowry says he feels safer now that the new district's trained volunteers are just a few minutes down the road. He's hoping a permanent fire station will make response faster and more reliable.
It's something that's just very, very important. We've had a lot of fires. We've had a lot of homes burned to the ground because the equipment, if there was equipment coming, couldn't get here in time because we're too far out.
The Rao River Fire District covers about 500 homes surrounding Dorena Lake and stretching almost to the border of the Umpqua National Forest. Darren Rhodes, a member of the Rao River Fire Protection District's elected board, says the district has land set aside for its main Dorena hub. He says raising funds to build that station has become much more urgent. The district, which formed in 2024, is using fire trucks donated from other fire departments around Oregon. That equipment is stored outdoors on private property that's now up for sale after the owner decided to move to another state.
That situation has changed, so the urgency to get our main station up has moved forward in a timeline that we were unprepared for.
Kathleen Isidore is the executive director of Rao River Valley Community Partnership. The nonprofit supports fire prevention and emergency preparedness programs and is helping the fire district raise money for the project. She says she's hoping to fundraise across the wider region. The Rao River Valley is a bicycle destination, watershed, and a direct route to the Umpqua National Forest and historic Bohemia Mines.
This station will be the infrastructure that supports medical and fire emergencies throughout the valley, not only for the 500 homes, but for also the tens of thousands of people who travel through our area.
She says the fire district and supporters have asked Oregon's two U.S. senators and Representative Val Hoyle to champion their application for federal funding. If successful, the community would still need to come up with their share, about $1.5 million. Isidore says that'll be a challenge. She says a significant share of the community's small tax base is already struggling and can't afford a bond measure or higher property taxes.
If anyone can help, we ask for your assistance. This is an area well worth preserving, and the people who visit here, the people who live here, their safety is critical.
Isidore says the community has already started working with the county on permitting and other logistical hurdles and should be able to break ground quickly if it raises the funds. In Dorena, I'm Rebecca Hansen-White reporting.
The number of homes being destroyed in wildfires has been on the rise in recent decades. As the Mountain West News Bureau's Murphy Woodhouse reports, researchers say such blazes add more pollution to the atmosphere than previously known.
Using new data, a team of scientists has assembled one of the first comprehensive analyses of emissions from homes burned in wildfires. What they found is that such pollution is serious and in some cases can even exceed emissions from all other human sources.
However, it's currently not accounted in any operational air quality forecast system.
That's Wenfu Tong, lead author of the new paper in the journal Nature. For hydrochloric acid, one of the pollutants studied, average annual emissions from home losses between 2016 and 2020 exceeded all other human sources in California and Tennessee. In Colorado and Oregon, burned homes surpassed human sources during at least 1 year. Tong also noted that exposures during wildfires are much more intense for those nearby than exposures from year-round sources. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Murphy Woodhouse.
A study published last week says sea level rise will be higher than communities around the globe expect. But as Courtney Sherwood reports, Oregon may have a better sense of what's to come.
Most forecasts of sea level rise around the globe are getting their estimates wrong. That's according to the scientific journal Nature. But Oregon State University professor Peter Ruggiero says we have better data here than many areas of the globe. He expects the sea level to go up by 1 to 3 feet by the end of the century and says Oregon communities are already starting to adapt.
Whether they choose hard engineering armoring or nature-based solutions to that sea level rise, or potentially even kind of a managed retreat options.
Ruggiero is director of a research hub that studies Cascadia coastlines and hazards. He says sea level is also affected by geology, and when the expected mega earthquake hits, coastal changes will be devastating. But that's impossible to predict, and climate change is here right now.
The Astoria Column, which was built in 1926 to celebrate settlement of the Pacific Northwest, celebrates its 100th anniversary this year. As Christian Vodenvenzel reports, it was supposed to be one of a dozen majestic monuments on a grand railway tour.
In the gift shop at the base of the Astoria Column, manager Meredith Barlow Spry stands over a big box of balsa wood airplane parts.
This is our workstation here, so this is where we are building them. Any downtime we have.
While the column offers plenty of history and stunning views, for many visitors it's the airplanes they remember. Thanks to an anonymous benefactor, they're still just a dollar each, and visitors love to throw them off the top of the 125-foot column to see how far they can fly.
Little tip with the planes. So if you have the wings all the way to the back, that's going to be set for a longer flight. And then push the wings forward, does loops and tricks.
Astoria is planning all kinds of events for the anniversary, a heritage fair, a rededication ceremony, a lecture. Just about every month has some kind of nod. Chelsea Vaughan, the curator of the Clatsop County Historical Society, is setting up a new exhibit on the column and how it's decorated. Italian immigrant Attilio Postella coated the column in different colors of plaster, then etched away the layers to create an image. But they began to fade within just a few years of Oregon's horizontal rain.
Tung oil was applied to the exterior of the column, and that has the effect of physically darkening the column so that then accelerated the, loss of pictures in that way.
White latex paint was applied in the 1960s to Meriwether Lewis and William Clark.
The original lines weren't really followed, and somehow it was either Lewis or Clark gets mutton chops. Elvis was suddenly on the column.
Portland philanthropist Jordan Schnitzer created the Friends of Astoria column in the 1990s after noticing the artwork was suffering. He helped raise more than $1 million to clean it, and in 1995, cover it in a special paint.
That is sort of like Gore-Tex. It lets the moisture out, but keeps the moisture from coming in.
He says standing on top of the column fills him with emotion.
If one is religious, I guess one could say you feel close to God being up there. If one is a humanist, one would feel that you are part of this cosmos.
In addition to honoring historic figures, the column highlights Astoria's role in the construction of the Northwestern Railways and the Astor family's businesses, which means for some, it's a symbol of colonialism and a testament to the displacement of Native Americans. But Tony Johnson, the chairman of the Chinook Indian Nation, says they're not too worried about misrepresentations.
Were we to do it again in 2026, we know that folks would approach it differently and we would have a much more historically accurate depiction. But we are not losing sleep over that.
He says the Chinook Nation knows its own connection to the area and things will change, hopefully for the better, over time.
I mean, the United States is a baby, right? Is very young. You know, America has to grow up still, right? It needs to mature.
The column is an impressive monument, but originally it was meant to be part of a much bigger vision. The president of the Great Northern Railroad in the 1920s dreamed of a grand railroad tour where people would stop across the Pacific Northwest to visit big monuments commemorating westward expansion. In researching the column, Chelsea Vaughan says they were supposed to be 12 monuments.
I was coming up short because there are not 12 monuments. There's not even close. So officially, there are 6 monuments, of which the Astoria column is by far the most grand.
Other monuments that did get built include a granite orb, 5 feet in diameter in North Dakota, dedicated to explorer David Thompson, who helped map North America. There's also the Marias Pass Obelisk in Montana, dedicated to Theodore Roosevelt, and some less official monuments.
I actually went out and saw one the other day, and it looked vaguely like a gravestone in both size and shape.
Climbing to the top of the 164 steps, Mac Burns with Friends of Astoria Column says locals don't generally see the column as some kind of monument to colonialism. Instead, it's a wonderful spot to stop and appreciate the world.
This is the perfect view of Astoria, how it's a peninsula. You can see the 8 miles out to the Pacific Ocean. You can see the 6 miles across the river to Washington State, our beautiful Astoria Megler Bridge.
You can climb to the top of the column for free. It's a city park, but parking does cost money. It's going up from $5 to $10 a year by May.
I'm Christian Fodenwenzel reporting.
This is KMUN. Up next is the American Democracy Minute. Stay tuned after that for the Ship Report.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In last week's Texas state primary, hundreds of voters were redirected, or worse, disenfranchised, due to polling location changes caused by party primary rule changes. Others had a new congressional district due to mid-decade redistricting. The moral of the story is to know before you go. As we reported, the Dallas and Williamson County issues were mostly the result of a conspiracy-driven change from countywide voting, where a voter can go to any polling place and vote, to voting only in your local precinct. The county attempted to communicate the change, but hundreds ended up at the wrong precinct and were redirected, causing confusion, anger, and long lines, and in some cases, being disenfranchised. Congressional districts have also changed in Texas, California, North Carolina, Ohio, and Missouri, and will likely change in Virginia and Florida due to President Trump's call for gerrymandering more GOP seats and the Democratic Party's response. That's less likely to affect where you're voting and more likely to affect for whom you're voting. The moral of the story is to know about those changes before you go to the polls. Local election officials will communicate voting location changes, but are also happy to answer your questions. BallotReady.org and the U.S. Election Assistance Commission can also help connect you. We have those resources and more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to KMUN News. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch. Email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and the KMUN news team. That includes me, host and producer Skylar Butenchin, and news director Katie Frankowitz.